Welcome back to Perfectly Framed, presented to you by FantasyInFrames.com, your premier destination for fantasy baseball relief pitching news and advice. Today is January 26, 2021. You're listening to episode number 28, where we will slap our take on Brad Hand signing with Washington, go over relief pitcher RPV versus ADP, look at some high strikeout relievers to roster at the end of your drafts, take a look back in time to 1928 and put barrel percentage into focus. I'm your host, Aaron Pags. Joining me tonight is Todd Barnes, as always. Todd, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, and I just found out that back-to-back shows with an actor. So what's up, Joe?
That's really weird because you see him as an actor. I see it as my boss is behind the camera and then my other boss is on camera. So I'm in the most awkward position of all time. It's like two moms staring you down while you're trying to do your homework. Jorge on one end. And of course, I'm talking about our guests, the creator of the Fantasy Black Book series, best-selling author, awesome actor, and a better guy, Mr. Joe Pisapia.
Well, what a lovely introduction, Aaron. I appreciate that. And I don't know who the last actor you had on. What was it? Did you have De Niro on last week? Or just going through all the Italians? I don't know. I don't know who you guys are pulling in terms of guests and whatnot. But I am not a community theater actor. I was the real deal, man. I studied classical theater. You know this. I was out there on sets actually working. I wasn't just, you know, not like Waiting for Guffman or any of those kind of movies where they're just, you know, they think they're doing a play and all that stuff. No, I was in the grind, but this is a fun grind too. And I'm very happy to be joining you. And, you know, you should feel good about, you know, having all your bosses around. That means they want to spend time with you. They like the work that you do. You know what I mean? I think that's a positive, Aaron.
There's no one listening to this podcast right now that's thinking, yeah, it's really great to spend time with your bosses.
I'm a great boss. I am super fun. I mean, come on. I don't know what Jorge is, but like, you know, maybe he's the taskmaster. I'm the good cop. He's the bad cop.
That's for sure. Definitely good cop, bad cop. If you don't know already, Joe was, he was kind enough to let me add some of my thoughts to his wonderful creation, the Fantasy Black Book, the Baseball 2021 version. I did the shortstop profiles, and the laundry list of authors in that book is tremendous year after year. So just honored to be a part of it. Thank you, Joe. If I haven't thanked you enough, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, thank you, because you did some wonderful work. And it was, I think last year when we were also on the podcast with you and we were talking about it, and you know, it's, I'm always looking for people who kind of see things the same way I do and who are in that grind and that hustle, and they're willing to put the work in. And I was very happy to have you be a part of it. And I think you had tremendous contributions, and it was great. It's a great team of people. You're right. I mean, you got Paul Spohr and Eric Cross and the Welsh, and you've got who else we got there? Chris Meany, our favorite Canadian. The list goes on and on. Just a phenomenal group of people.
SP there. Streamer Bubba, what's up, guys?
Bubba, our boy. I mean, you know, my podcast, those from On Deck. It's such a great group of people, and everybody's so like passionate about it, which is so great. I think it comes through. And I think that's always the thing too. Like, you want to have something where everyone's passionate about it. And I always say the same thing to everybody. They say, well, what do you want? I said, I want you to write what you would want to read. And if you stick with that, what is it that you would want to read? Well, then that's what you should be writing in that profile and what's important for you to know. And you know, Paul Spohr is the king of that, right? He'll go through and there'll be one guy, he'll write a sentence about a guy. And that's, you know, that's what I mean. That's all you need sometimes is a sentence on a guy. Some guys, he's got three paragraphs on. Like, it depends on who the pitcher is, what's going on. And I think that's what's important. And I'm very proud of this edition of the book. And I think that it's a tribute to the team.
Well, really quickly, without giving away and divulging all the secrets of the Fantasy Black Book, just let our listeners know if they don't know. And I tell them every single week to go out to Amazon and buy a copy.
Yeah, but I like that about you, Aaron.
But if they don't know what this book is about, give them the 30-second promo for the Black Book for this year.
Sure. I won't give you the Dan Campbell promo. I won't scare the hell out of you talking about biting your kneecaps or anything like that. No, what the Black Book is based on relative position value. And the concept is basically, you know, everyone does rankings, and that's great. That's not enough. You need quantified rankings. You need to understand how much better a player is than another player. You also need something that's not just projection based. It has projections built into it. So it uses projections, it uses previous season, three-year averages when it's accountable and when you can have it. But at the same time, I think baseball in fantasy terms, people get way too hung up on projections. What does Zip say? What does Steamer say? Well, who cares? Does anybody go back every year and see how accurate they are? And most of the time, they're just kind of regurgitating what happened previously. So it's really not that mind-blowing. I think everybody gets hung up on it. But it's more important to understand the different formats you play in and what the strategy should be and how the player pool affects that strategy. And there isn't just one broad stroke that you can go ahead because, you know, everyone's playing best ball and who's in a points league and who's doing also a 5x5 and a 6x6 and who's doing a head-to-head category leagues. And we've got chapters about every single one of those and how to strategize because of what the player pool looks like for this particular year. And then we have the RPV system too. It fluctuates depending on the depth of the league you play in. How are you playing corner guys? Are you playing five active outfielders? How that changes the landscape of the player pool, and most importantly, how you need to structure your strategy around it is crucial. And that's the difference between winning and losing leagues now, because everybody gets good information. Everyone is spoon-fed good information and lots of it on every host site that they play. It is not like it was 15, 20 years ago. It is very different landscape-wise. So how do you separate yourself with RPV, with a system like that, that is very easy to understand, it's very clear, and fantasy sports is very simple. Baseball, football, basketball, it doesn't matter. It's about me being more productive than you from as many spots in my roster as I can. If I can do that consistently throughout a whole season, guess what? I'm going to be a playoff team, and that gives me a chance at the money, and it gives me a chance at a championship. And that's a very easy system to wrap your mind around. And I'm all about simple, applicable, and adaptable. And I think the other thing that we have with Major League Baseball and fantasy is we have so many stats that we get overloaded. And we kind of forget. It's like, well, we got the barrel rates and we got the exit velocities and all these great stats, and that's fine. But again, it's not a strategy. So in place of all that, like, yes, all that is great. But how do you approach second base this year in a league with 15 teams? How do you approach, you know, different positions? How do you approach pitching this year coming off a 60-game season and how different that's going to be potentially? What happens if there's a six-man rotation this year? All of those things built in. That's what Black Book is about. And I think that's why we've had the success we've had.
You didn't have to sell me, because long before I wrote a single word in this book, I have been a long time purchaser of this product.
And it's because of people like you that it is a brand. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to you, people like you, because there's been people with it from the beginning where I just wrote it just to write it. I thought I was going to sell 50 copies of it, you know, and never expected it to become a business. I never expected to be like, I'm a small business owner of this thing. And it's great. And I think it just proves the point. Like if you feel strongly about something, if you believe in something and you refuse to say no, and you're going to keep grinding and keep doing it, then yes, things can be accomplished. And look at Black Book as a great example of that. And now, you know, baseball is huge. Football is even bigger. And, you know, we're hopefully going to go back and do NBA again this year and NHL as well, which we've done 2 years ago. So 2020 kind of screwed up a lot of plans for everybody, but it's amazing to think that by the end of the year, we'll be back to four sports potentially in the Black Book series. And that's very exciting stuff.
That is exciting. And you mentioned really briefly that, you know, if you have some passion about something and you want to just put it down on paper, and if no one ever watches it or reads it, you know, then, oh, well, at least you got your passion out. Right. And so this is episode number 28. And every single episode, we go back to the year that coincides with our episode number. And in 1928, a man drew a mouse, Steamboat Willie, and Walt Disney produced a short film, and then the rest is history, Joe. That was 1928. Other things that happened in 1928, Alexander Fleming discovers penicillin. Thank you, Dr. Fleming, for keeping us all alive to do this podcast. Amelia Earhart, one of the greatest women in history, flows solo across the Atlantic Ocean. And, of course, Joe's favorite all-time test, the home pregnancy test, was first introduced.
Oh, boy. No comment.
All wonderful things that happened in 1928.
Cole also born in 1928, I'm pretty sure.
He may have been. So, Joe, if you don't know, we go back and look at some pictures from that year, and Todd has got a picture that he dug into. Oh, we're not saying dug into anymore about pictures from the 20s. We do not dig these people up. That's right. They're dead. We'll see more, Todd. Tell me a little bit about Mr. We'll see more.
Yeah, we'll see more. I couldn't believe you guys didn't talk about him on the 1927 episode. But yeah, we'll see more. He just kind of – his story in 1928 just kind of intrigued me, but I'll give you a little backstory first. So 1927, he led the league in ERA and saves, He had 13 saves that year. The only other person to have more than him was the great Firpo Marbury. He also
the great
Firpo Marbury. Now that we know more about him, so Moore went 19-7 that season. 13 saves, led the league, and helped the Yankees to a World Series. Fast forward to 1928, he could not get his world-class sinker to sink. He actually threw sidearm from a previous injury early on in his career, but just couldn't get it to sink in 1928. Doctors kept on working on his arm, just couldn't get it going. Find out at the end of the 1928 season that he pulled his best impression of Mason Saunders, a.k.a. Mad Bum, and was working on his barn in Oklahoma that he built himself and fell off of it and hurt his shoulder. Ended up retiring, played a little bit in the minors, signed back with the Red Sox, traded back to the Yankees, but was really just a one-hit wonder after that 1927 season. And I guess the moral of the story to this is pitchers just should not be on trying to do their best rodeo impression. That's all I've learned from it. Anytime you get on a bull or go on a barn or something like that, you're destined to get hurt.
He joins a long line of major leaguers with accidents with the likes of Yoenis Cespedes and Madison Bumgarner that you know may have ended or at least abruptly ended the prime of their career for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, my story is just as sad, if not sadder. And I'm talking about Mr. Walter Edward Morris, who back in 1928 won 19 games and also saved five. They called him Big Ed Morris because he was much bigger than everybody else, 6'2", like 235 pounds. And you could imagine back in 1928 that was an amazingly large man standing on the mound. He won 19 games for the Boston Red Sox team that only won 58 that year. So he was like he was such a good pitcher on such a bad team, and he was mostly forgotten. His career kind of took a turn for the worst. He kind of fell off. He got an arm injury later on in his career in the early 30s, which they claimed, or there was a story, a report that he got into a fight with some Detroit police officer. Anyway, we'll get back to that story in just a second. 1931, his arm's back, his offseason, his arm strength is back. And so on leap year, February 29th, 1932, they threw him a going away party before he would head off to Savannah, Georgia to begin spring training with the Red Sox. I'm talking about Big Ed Morris. The future looked bright, and his friends in Brewtown, Alabama, they wanted to hold a party for him on his last night going out of town. So they were at a cabin on the river. They were having a fish fry. Well, that's where Big Ed got stabbed to death at his own going away party. He died a couple days later on March 2nd. And the stories about that night went into some very, very interesting details.
Did it have to also coincide with the discovery of the pregnancy test?
Well, one version of that night, there was an account that Joe White, the guy who stabbed Morris to death, and Mr. Morris's wife maybe had a little something going on.
Yeah, well, the next thing you know, the whole test is blue, and then next thing you know, our old friend is dead.
Another story that makes a little more sense to me was that he was going around the party asking if anyone wanted any peanuts and peeing in everyone's nuts. Yes. The old peanut bit.
I haven't done that bit since college. That's a great bit.
Yeah, so Big Ed Morris had that ahead of you, Joe, back in 1931. Sadly, it ended absolutely tragically for him. So rest in peace, Big Ed. And we end these always horribly on terrible notes. So let's liven it up a little bit. Let's get some excitement in here. Brad Hand signs with the Nationals, Todd.
Yeah, Brad Hand to the Nats. So he chose – I heard the Mets had a more lucrative deal for him, but ended up choosing the Nats, $10.5 million, and he should be the front runner for saves. He led the majors last year, 16 saves, saved all of his 16 chances. Since 2016, he's one of three closers with 100 saves and a sub-3 ERA. So he's gets the job done. He became a full-time closer in 2016. Actually, crazy stat. Debut, he had 6 strikeouts in his debut, and to this day, that's still his career high. But since 2016, when he became a full-time reliever, he's had a 2.70 ERA, over 12 strikeouts per 9, and over 320 innings pitched. So he's proven himself year in and year out. Good against lefties and righties. Last year, he had a career best 29.1 K to walk rate. Always a stat I love to dig into. He did have a career low 4.7 walk rate, so that was pretty good. And the only concern I do have for him, Mark Zuckerman put out a good piece for Masson, MASN. I don't know if I said that right, but we'll go with it. So he put out a good article in it, just kind of touched on how Brad Hand's the only left-hander in that bullpen. And the NL East is loaded with power hitters, left-handed power hitters. You got Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman. And if they come up in the 7th, 8th inning, I wouldn't doubt if Davey Martinez brings in the lefty and Brad Hand to face them. So that might cut into a couple of his save opportunities. Although Dave Martinez does kind of like to use Wander Suero and Will Harris against left-handers due to their cutter that cuts into lefties. So either way, I like Brad Hand. The other little news we had, we won't go too much into that because it's not too big of a deal, but the Yankees and Red Sox made a trade. Otto goes to the Yankees. Really, well, he's going to definitely strike out a lot of the right-handed power hitters for the Yankees this season, I would say. But he'll be in line for some holds. But really, it was for the Yankees really just to free up a roster spot and to give them some salary relief.
Joe, did you have any opinion on Brad Hand heading into the season and into the offseason? And were you, I'm sure you were had your eye out to see where he would land. Is Washington a spot that moves him up for you or just kind of holds steady?
Well, look, in terms of RPV, you know, Brad Hand's been very consistent. RPV likes to award consistency too, which I think is also something that's very important. You know, I like to live in the reality of fantasy as much as I can. You know, it's great to look ahead, what could be, but let's look at what a player is. And I think the reason he signs with Washington is because he's got a clear shot, that closer role. Mets bullpen's a little crowded there. They have Diaz. They have some other options too if they needed to. So I think it, you know, understandably in the marketplace for him, especially with a looming CBA, the best thing you could do is sign the place where you know you're going to close, even if it's a couple million dollars less, because what you could do is make sure you drive up your stock for another free agent year. And then after the CBA is over, then you're able to go out there, maybe get a 2 or 3 year deal on the market. But it's harder to do when you have 8 saves as opposed to, you know, 35 saves. Mm-hmm. And I think he's putting himself in a better situation for that. I know Hand's velocity was down a little bit at times last year, but, you know, even though the strikeout rate was down from like where it usually is around the 13, you know, K per 9 down to about 11, the walk rate was also down. So it was a better version of him as a pitcher, even with the velocity a little skeptical at times. But I wouldn't read too much into that because last year was such a cluster. Last year was so very different in terms of the stopping, the starting, the preparation. You know, these guys, even the relievers to a certain extent, but pitchers especially are creatures of habit. And when you take them out of the habit, you know, you see all kinds of weird things happen. Some guys responded well to it, most kind of not so good. So I think with Brad Hand, it makes a lot of sense. It's a good signing by the Nationals. It's also a one-year deal. And with him on a one-year deal, with Schwarber on a one-year deal now left, with Josh Bell getting one more deal year left on his deal after they acquired him, it feels like the Nats are saying, all right, if we can get Strasburg healthy again, if we can get Scherzer healthy, we make another run here. But I can tell you this, if they are not playing well in the first 70 games of the season, they're definitely going to be making some moves. And I would imagine those moves are jettisoning all the other guys, signing Juan Soto to a big long-term deal, and then trying to rebuild around, because they've got a lot of money tied up in Strasburg and Scherzer and to a couple other guys and the veterans. So they're going to have to really kind of take one more run. And it's going to be tough. If they don't have those pitchers healthy, it's going to be very tough, because the Mets have improved. The Braves are still very good. Realmuto just went back to the Phillies. They're trying to fix their bullpen a little bit. But the East is going to be something. And look, the Marlins made the playoffs last year, so everyone can make jokes all they want about the Marlins. But the Marlins are, you know, a team that's on the upswing and improving. And the Ottavino's trade is very interesting as well, because what it tells you is the Yankees don't think the Red Sox are a threat. When's the last time you saw a Yankee-Red Sox trade? I mean, that does not typically happen in baseball. But I guess the Yankees just don't see the Red Sox as a threat. It's good for Ottavino's value for sure. They definitely needed a closer. He will fill that role for them quite well. And I think he'll be one of those guys that you'd like to target kind of later in drafts.
As Joe said, RPV loves Brad Hand, and we love RPV. So right after the break, we're going to give Joe a chance to break down relative position value for us.
Hey, 4Eyed fans. It's your favorite host, Aaron Pags. Think you have what it takes to take on Nate, Todd, or myself, or even some of the best fantasy players in the industry? Well, then head over to NFBC and play against us. Use this link, playnfbc.com/fantasyandframes, and get into the biggest contests with the best prizes against the best competition. I'll see you there.
Now, welcome back to Perfectly Framed. I'm Aaron Pags. With me, Todd Barnes, and our special guest, Joe Pisapia. Joe, of course, the creator of the Black Book, and also the creator of RPV, Relative Position Value. If you are a first-time listener to this show, it's probably the first time that you've ever heard of this. And so, because I use it regularly, it's like second nature to me. But for someone who's never used it before, give them the whole formula, Joe. Everything, every number you put in there, every weighted average, spell it all out. So no one will take notes, I promise.
Well, look, you know, the good news is in the book, I do it all for you. And what's more American than buying somebody else's work and then making money off of it, right? I mean, that's the American way. But like, as I said before, it's quantified rankings. So it shows you where the fantasy league average is in a position, where the positive players, the players that are better than the fantasy league average, by how much, and then the negative players. And what that allows you to do is kind of craft a strategy and understand it's better to build roster strength and a core roster strength somewhere on your team than trying to fill your positions. It's one of the biggest mistakes that people make in fantasy sports is they try to say, well, you know, I don't have a third baseman yet, or I need to get that. No, you need to get strength in your roster, because then you're in a position of strength where you're good somewhere, whether it be power, whether it be pitching, whatever it might be. And then that allows you also leverage and making trades and other things as the season goes on. And that is something that's underutilized. And also what RPV ends up doing kind of default is when you see the percentages, like let's say, you know, with the relief pitchers, for instance, right? Like who is the best relief pitcher? How does that work? Well, Josh Hader obviously is the top. So how much better is he than the fantasy league average? Well, if you're just playing in a league where you only have to have like one relief pitcher and he's 25% better than the league average, that's pretty good. That's a substantial bump there. If you're playing in a deeper league, let's say where you have two active relief pitcher slots in a 12 team league, that's 24 active relievers. All of a sudden it becomes a 36% value, right? And then the next guy is 24, and the next guy's here and there and there. And what it shows you is actually tiers as well. And everybody likes to do that in their rankings too. Well, here's my tier. And then let's, well, what does that mean? How substantial is the drop off? How much should I pay attention to it? And then you can tell, well, why would I draft this player here? He doesn't move the needle for me. I can wait two more rounds and draft another player at that same position who's going to be comparable in those stats. So if you want to wrap your mind around it simply, it's kind of like war, but for fantasy.
So you would say that the hardest position to put into this RPV formula is easily the position that we talk about 100% of the time here on Perfectly Framed, and that's relief pitchers, right?
It is. I can't believe you guys do nothing but relief pitchers. This is amazing.
Someone's got to do it because no one wants to, right?
Did you ever think about why it's become more necessary, actually. You're filling a void because it is very necessary for people to understand how bullpens are working. And the evolution of the position, like when Black Book started about a decade ago, is, you know, you could go and solidify a couple of the top guys and not worry about it. Now there really isn't a lot of top guys. There's maybe one or two at the most. So after that, you're better off waiting and letting it come to you. And I think the worst thing you can do is the biggest mistake people make. And, you know, if you go back and look at the last few years, it's overpaying for the mid-tier closer, because they are equally risky as everybody else. They're not safer. And what happens is you end up missing on good starting pitching depth, good outfield depth, good offensive depth to take a player that could lose their job, get hurt, all these other problems happen. It's the Cody Allens of the world. It's the Hansel Robles, who was a guy that I hated going after his big breakout season. I was just screaming from the rooftops, don't draft this guy. He is like the poster child. Like, don't go down this well. And if you avoided that well, then you would just go and pick up the guys that are you're able to pick off the waiver wire. And I think this year especially, you know, I just did a mock with Steve Gardner and Dan Harris. We did a mock together for Fantasy Pros. And, you know, I wasn't able to get the elite tier pitching. So what I did was I pivoted off of that. I had Carrasco, I had Lance Lynn, I had Lizardo and Sixto Sanchez, but I was able to get Josh Hader in that same draft. So I was able to make up for it by going, you know what? I will take the advantage guy here. I'll be the first guy to take a reliever because the rest of my starting pitching is good, not great. And I'm going to do it with depth instead this year on that particular roster, right? So it's seeing where the advantages are. And with relief pitching, it's very difficult. And I think it's a good service you guys are doing because people need to know where the next saves are coming from so they can be proactive instead of reactive. Because if you pick up a guy and speculate him for, what, a couple bucks in the waiver wire, so much better than end up paying, you know, 15 2 weeks later when he gets the job. And I think that's something people need to be aware of too.
That's definitely our goal this year, is to provide that resource as early as possible to be the ones who are staying up with our newborn child watching the Mariners close out a win or whatever and seeing who's warming up in the bullpen. Yeah, and seeing who's warming up in the bullpen. One of the things I like to do with RPV is, especially when it comes down to when it comes to pitching, is I like to see who RPV, because it factors inconsistency so well, I like to see who RPV is in on that ADP really isn't as in on. And one of those pitchers is actually a reliever, and that's Kenley Jansen, whose RPV in deeper leagues is 22%, which has him as the fifth overall reliever. But ADP, he's going 127 overall as the eighth reliever. So you get a couple slots of value there. He's had, Todd put this tweet out the other day, 100% of the Dodgers saves since 2015. Wow. That is as consistent as it gets. And I took we are trying our best to not ignore 2020, but to remember what we thought of players heading into the 2020 season. So looking at how they finished up to 2019, and then also how they pitched in 2020, because with relievers, you're talking about like a 20 inning sample. So I don't know how much weight you can put on 20 innings, but Kenley Jansen from the trade deadline in 2019 through last season in his last 45 innings pitched, 56 strikeouts, a 22% K minus walk, a 1.12 whip. They do have a bunch of guys behind him, but none of those are stars. None of those are big names. It's Corey Kniebel. It's Brewster Gratterall. It's Blake Treinen. All guys who are fine filling in the roles, being the fireman type for the manager to use when, you know, when the seventh inning is the biggest three outs. I think Kenley is so safe, so secure in the ninth inning, and the Dodgers are just going to run him out there until it's the playoffs like they did last year. And then their best pitcher is going to get the save situations, but we don't care about the playoffs, right? We play fantasy in the regular season. And so I think Kenley is a super, super value, and RPV nailed it on that one for sure.
Yeah. And it is. And that's because it takes in the 3-year averages, right? So all those 100 saves or what have you, that you were able to figure out there that Todd found was the ability to recognize consistency does matter, role does matter. And yes, it's not going to necessarily be the same this year, but you have to at least reward it to a certain extent. And we do a whole series of podcasts at the Black Book on RPV versus ADP. And it's very astute of you to stumble upon this, because this is another useful tool, right? See the players that have lower ADPs but higher RPVs, and you go, okay, well, there's value there, and that's where I should be going in the draft. And that really does make a significant difference. And Jansen, look, you know, Jansen can be up and down sometimes. It's not always perfect. But I don't think there's ever, I don't know about you, Todd, but like I never had a concern that he was going to just lose his job outright ever. And I don't think any of the guys that Aaron mentioned really kind of, I don't know, scare me this year to do it either. I think the Dodgers know who they are. Jansen's been that guy. And let's not forget too, Kenley Jansen came late to pitching. He doesn't have nearly the mileage on his arm as some other guys. He was a converted catcher, I believe, if memory serves.
He was.
So, you know, like you can't think of him in the same realm of some other guys, even at the same age, because he just doesn't have the same mileage on his arm, and he's always been a reliever. So, you know, I think that is a very good one too. And I'll throw another name too that I think is interesting, is he's the, you know, fantasy league average in the shallow league, but in the deeper league, he's still a small advantage, and he's very consistent. He's in a new place now. It's Raisel Iglesias. You know, the Angels desperately need to bring in a pitcher because they do not have enough. But I don't know what the Reds are doing. I know you're wearing the Reds hat right now, Todd. I see it here. I don't want to, you know, rain on the parade. But I'm not sure what they're doing with that bullpen, but Iglesias was one of the most consistent closers over the last few years in terms of just hitting the totals. And you know what? Give me the guy that I know is going to have the job. Give me the guy that, you know, is consistent. And I mean, that's another guy that I think kind of just floats out there and lasts a little too long. And he's still an advantage before you get to that group that you have a ton of questions about. And there's always that group that you have questions about.
That's interesting that you mentioned the consistency. I mean, like Kenley Jansen, from 2015 to 2019, he's earned 60% of the saves in every season. Three of those 5 years, 70% or more. That one lone season that Aaron was talking about was 2016. He earned 100% of them. But when you talk about consistency, one guy I liked on the list, he was a deeper league sitting at 16%, right behind Kenley Jansen. You can get him around ADP pick 160, was Nick Anderson. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's necessarily a guy that you can say is going to get all the saves. I think he's going to get the bulk of saves for Tampa Bay. And to get the bulk of saves for Tampa Bay is absolutely ridiculous because, I mean, last year, they even in the shortened season, they led baseball in saves and save opportunities. In the last 3 years, they've been top five in saves and save ops. And then even from 2015 to 2019, in those full years, they're the only team that averaged over 50 saves a year. So I don't know if Nick Anderson is going to get all the saves, but I think it's going to be hard for Cash to watch him pitch every day and say, man, this is not my ninth inning guy. But what do you think about the consistency? And he's high on the list, but he might not get all the saves.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the evolution of the position now. It's like if you can't get the guy who's got saves, can you get the best arm in the bullpen? Can he help you with the ratios and the strikeouts and the ERA and all that stuff? And I think that, you know, the evolution, especially in a place like Tampa that uses their relievers so uniquely compared to every other team, that's something to, you know, keep in mind that, you know, you can draft relievers and they don't have to get the saves. You can find the saves later on. And this is, you know, for me personally, this is always my problem that I have with roto formats, right? Because why in God's name, theoretically, should a one inning, three out save cost or be valued as much, and it is, as a win? A win you have to pitch five innings to get. This one you have to get three outs. That's nuts to me. I always thought it was nuts. I always think it's ridiculous. That's why I like head-to-head points leagues, because I can value them differently, and I can devalue saves because they should be devalued, because the position's devalued in Major League Baseball. It's the same reason, like in football, I like super flex leagues because quarterback is the most important position. So why are we devaluing that in fantasy? We should be promoting it. We should be challenging ourselves to have two quarterbacks playing, or at least the ability to play a second quarterback and go deeper into that. So when it comes to a team like Tampa, I'm good drafting Nick Anderson, knowing that saves might be a question mark because I know he's going to help in the other areas. And I know one of the few things I can find on the waiver wire are saves. They are cheap. They're disposable. You can find them. And if you have this young guy and you can continue the carousel with them. Now you have to make sure you budget accordingly. And like I said, try to be proactive when you see a situation starting to come up. I remember a couple of years ago when Carlos Martinez was coming back from surgery and they said, yeah, I was on a show and they said, what do you think Carlos Martinez is going to do when he comes back? I said, close games. And they said, but he's not a close. I said, no, but you don't understand. This guy's had an arm injury. The best thing they can do is know exactly what day he's going to pitch, not get him up and down 100 times, start with a clean inning. There's so many reasons why he should be closing and has nothing to do with anything else, except it's probably the healthiest thing for him in order to contribute to the team. And sure enough, he ended up saving games for them. And if you had been proactive and picked him up on the waiver wire for cheap when he was still hurt, with that in mind, you ended up getting a fair amount of saves in the second half of the year. It's that kind of looking ahead and using some real baseball acumen that can actually help you, I think, in this category in Brodo.
Todd, 100% of our guests agree that saves are not the be-all and end-all for relief pitching. Why in Major League Baseball and Fantasy Baseball have not figured this out yet, that guys like Devin Williams need to be highlighted? They need to be rostered in every league, not just points leagues or leagues that over-glorify the K, which the K is an exciting play. So I have no problem playing in points leagues where the Ks are high up on the points list. But anyway, Joe, you're like a walking segue here. So you mentioned these high strikeout guys who are also viable in most fantasy leagues. Is there a guy, and I think Devin Williams is probably your guy, but is there a guy at the end of drafts, or even, you know, before some closers come off the board, like a Nick Anderson or a Devin Williams, that you actually have like circled on your sheets?
Well, look, those are two good ones. So I they're actually, you know, like Devin Williams is like round eight. Like, I'd rather have a fantasy league average reliever, Devin Williams, who gives me all the other stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I think Ryan Presley's an interesting guy too, who's going to get saves this year for Houston. I think he's being a little undervalued right now. But, you know, it's funny because once you hit that mid-tier closer situation, they become like the Mark Melansons of the world, you know, like the guys that aren't necessarily the most exciting secondary, you know, stuff kind of guys, but they're you know, guys who are historically, you know, you feel good about them being closers. They're veteran relievers. They know how to get outs in big spots, and that ends up what, you know, becomes of the position at some point. But I think those names that you mentioned are very good ones. And I would encourage people too to continue to look for the next ones that are going to show up in that group. Start looking at the relievers in every bullpen that have very high K per nine rates, guys who have high strikeout percentages, you know, because that's typically where those guys will succeed in the bullpen. The guys who, you know, maybe a little effectively wild, good velocity, that combination of stuff, you know, they can be two pitch pitchers in the bullpen as long as those two pitches are good. So I would encourage people, you know, to look at each bullpen and find those names and kind of circle them. So even if you're not in the deepest league, you put them on your watch list, right? You put them on your little scout list and things like that. And as the closer ahead of them starts to falter, maybe they get in line for a little bit more opportunity.
One of the things we're doing here at Perfectly Framed and fantasyandframes.com, of course, is trying to come up with this profile of the next guy up. Well, whatever that next man up profile is going to be. So this is why we're going to keep, you know, the eye test, right? We get to do the eye test, but there's also some stats or some numbers that we like to see. Throw hard, pitch late in games, strike, you know, have a pitch that you can get people to strike out on. And of course, we're covering all the bullpens all season long at fantasyandframes.com. Todd's got the AL and NL East mound visits. Nate, who's not with us tonight, he's got the AL and NL Central mound visits. I'm doing the AL and NL West, like I said, with the newborn coming up right on opening day. Nate. We gave Nate the night off.
I mean, I'm here and Nate's not here. What's going on? Come on, Nate.
Next time you come on, Joe, it'll be Nate. I promise. But he's not ducking you. He's not ducking you. Right. You said, who are those other guys behind the Devin Williams? And one guy is someone that I'm super familiar with, or going to be super familiar with this year, because he's pitching for my Mets. And that's Trevor May. Over the last three seasons, he's had a 33% K rate with a 15% swinging strike rate. And we talked to Alex Fast about, how do you know if a K rate is real? And one of those metrics is the swinging strike rate. So if it's about double your swinging strike rate, that's pretty real. And that 33% K rate is pretty real. He's increased his fastball velocity three straight seasons from 94 to 96 to 97 miles an hour with a 1.06 whip over that time. His average draft position, 446. That's compared to Devin Williams at 153. So you can get him in every single draft you play in, right, everywhere for basically nothing. And he's behind Edwin Diaz, who I am, as a Mets fan, this is where we have to separate our fandom from our analysis. Edwin Diaz, Sugar himself, is only 25 innings pitched removed from a 2.33 home run per nine, which is bad, folks, a 5.59 ERA, which is bad, a 7 blown save season, which stinks. So like, he is not that far removed from, we were going to run him and boo him out of town. Mm-hmm. And now Trevor May is sitting there as a consistent fireball arm right behind him, ready to pounce on this job. So I think he is being super overlooked in drafts of like 12 or 15 teams. He needs to be rostered in all those formats.
I agree. I am a loser Met fan like you. And it's very hard to get excited about the, and I got to tell you, I really like their offseason. And It's very hard for me to you know, I don't want to let this happen. I don't want to get excited about this, but I love Lindor and I love Carrasco. And I thought the Trevor May signing was very cagey. I go back all the way in my dynasty league years ago to drafting him as a minor leaguer when he was a starting pitcher with the Twins. So that's how far back I go with Trevor May. And Trevor May had injuries, and Trevor May wasn't able to, you know, sustain what it took to be a starting pitcher. And it took him a little while in the bullpen, but he's been a pretty good reliever ever since. And I think this was a really good signing. And I think this kind of allowed them to not have to overpay Brad Hand either, which I thought was a very cagey move. It would be nice to have Hand also, but I'm with you. I think May is definitely one of those guys. And Diaz is far from perfect. Diaz is very home run prone. Even last year, there were some moments where you just kind of rolled your eyes and how can you let that guy take you out at that point in time? So, we'll see here what they do, but I think that Trevor May is the perfect kind of poster child for what you're saying. It's a really good mark of a guy who's all the signs are pointing in the right direction. And some guys, you know, don't get into closer roles till later in life too. I mean, Joe Nathan didn't become a closer, I think, till he was 32, if memory serves, or something like that. So, you know, you kind of like, and look at the run Joe Nathan had as a closer for what, about 7 years, right? Where he was just unbelievable. So, you know, not everybody becomes a closer right away. And if a pitcher was really good, he would be a starting pitcher. There's a deficit in every single relief pitcher. That's why they're relief pitchers. Always remember that. If they were great, they'd be starting pitchers and they'd be pitching 5, 6, 7 innings. But because there's some kind of defect in them, whether it be doesn't have a third pitch, whether it be arm issues, whether it be stamina, whatever it is, that's why they become relievers. So that is also why you get the volatility at the position, because if they were great to begin with, if they had excellent control, if they had all the intangibles, they would be starting pitchers.
Well, yeah, because outs are valuable, and that's why, you know, that's why there's 27 of them and the starting pitcher goes as long as they do, even though they don't go as long as they have. And, you know, not to get on a total tangent here, but baseball is clearly going towards more bullpen centric and
very specialized.
Fantasy baseball is lagging a little bit.
Gonna pitch, and then Jimmy's gonna pitch, and then Larry's gonna pitch, and then Susie's gonna pitch. Everybody's gonna pitch an inning. It's gonna be great. Everybody paid the same. Everybody's gonna pitch an inning. It's just like the local little league pretty soon.
Yeah, and those, you know, reliever focused websites and podcasts will have a lot to talk about too.
That's right. You guys are, let me tell you, maybe you guys are hitting this right. You're ahead of the curve. Cheers. That's what you are.
One of the things we do on every episode, Joe, is because, you know, these stats, they get overwhelming. We hear these numbers, we hear these percentages. We have no idea what the hell anything means. We don't even know what the average is. We just say Sierra 3.97 and then move on to the next thing. And everyone's like, Sierra, is it like, isn't that a GMC truck? Like, I have no idea what everyone's spitting at me. And one of the things we try to do is at the end of every episode, we try to slow it down. We find a something that's in the fantasy pop culture baseball stat of the day and just kind of break it down for dummies. And Todd, can you break down barrel percentage allowed, which sounds like a lot, but barrel percentage allowed by pitchers?
I can do my best on it. So to fully understand barrel rate, you kind of need to know what a barrel is. And honestly, it's a lot more complicated than you would think. I would suggest going up and looking it online just to kind of get a better understanding after I go and tell you about it. So to be barreled, a ball has to be hit over 98 miles an hour or more. And it also needs a launch angle between 26 to 30 degrees. And then after that, any ball that's hit a mile per hour over 98, the launch angle increases. That's the gist of it. It's a little complicated, but who doesn't love barrels? We love seeing balls get hit hard, but relievers don't love barrels. And so that's why we're going to check in on this stat. So StatCast actually began tracking barrels in 2015. I threw out 2020 because 2020. From 2018 to 2019, more than half of all barrels resulted in home runs, sitting just under 57%. In that same span, 83% of home runs were barrels. So if you're hitting the ball hard, it's going out the park. Just to kind of give you a understanding of when you're looking at barrel rates, what a league average is. So since they started tracking barrel rate in 2015, it's actually increased every single year. In 2015, it started at 4.6%. It's kind of gone up. It's 0.6, 0.7% every year. And in 2020, it was sitting at 7.5%. In 2019, it was 6.6%. So, I mean, the shortened season could add a little bit of a jump to that. But in 2019, we had almost 3,400 barrels in baseball. And our 2020 pace was looking at almost 3,800. So it continues to rise. I mean, that's what batters are trying to do. They're trying to hit the ball hard. So I kind of broke it down and I went and looked at barrel rate for relievers in 2020. Granted, it was a shortened season, so I put the inning limit at 20 innings just to kind of make up for that shortened season. There was a couple names that I noticed that stood out. Josh Hader was obviously one of them. He came in at like 12 on the list, 14.7%. But then you go back, you look at Josh Hader, and each of the last two seasons, he's been over 10%. So when it comes to Josh Hader, that barrel rate is just something to kind of expect for him. And then you have someone like Craig Kimbrell. He was third worst with pitchers. 20 innings are pitched with a 18.5%. He had a 17.3% in 2019. Go back to 2017, 2018, under 10%. So you're like, what happened? And then you notice that his fastball in 2019, that's the first time since 2011 that it dipped under 97 miles an hour. So could that be it? So that's another guy that you're like, well, I think I'm going to expect a high barrel rate. Another guy that's a potential closer for Seattle is Rafael Montero. He was 10th worst on that list with 15.2%. In 2019, he sat at 13.7, so he's another guy. He came back from Tommy John in 2018. Before that, he was under 10% as well, around the league average. And then on the list, there was a couple guys I noticed that were high that I kind of expect them to drop back down to at least league average or what their career rates are. And that was Aroldis Chapman and Amir Garrett. Both of those guys had well above average, league average barrel rates. And Chapman had a under 4.5% from 2015 to 2019, and he was 11-1 in 2020. So to have that barrel rate and to basically be the same, I mean, granted he pitched injured. In September he was amazing, but before that he had some question marks early on in the year. And then on the flip side, Amir Garrett's been the same exact way. He's been under 6% for most of his career, and then in 2020 blew up. So I kind of expect him to kind of regress to the norm. And then another guy is Archie Bradley. He was from 2015 to 2019. He was under 6.1%, and he was at 9.8% in 2020. But the crazy thing I noticed about Archie Bradley was hard hit rate and barrel rate kind of correlate. 9.8% barrel rate, which was his highest since 2015. I mean, he was a starter before that, but he had a career low hard hit rate, but he had one of the highest barrel rates in his career. So I thought that was a little interesting. So that was one thing that I noticed that I'm thinking he's going to regress back to the norm. And then on the low end of the guys that don't give up any barrels, your 2019 version of Brandon Workman, who gave up one barrel all season and then came back last year with a 12.3 barrel rate. So that's what you're kind of expecting when you get these guys with just ridiculous barrel rates. You're like, it's not sustainable. So one guy that everyone seems to have as a top 10 closer is James Karinchak. And he's sitting at 2.5%. Kenley had a really low one too at 3.5%. And he had the lowest barrel rate and hard hit rate of his career. So I don't know if that's sustainable as well. But yeah, James Karinchak was one of the biggest ones for me. 2.5%. I get that he throws the ball hard, but I just don't think, looking at some of these guys on the low end of the list, you just have to know that they're going to, like I said, league average is 7.5%. And to hold that up over a whole season, it's just those guys can't sustain that.
One of the things about barrel rate, right, and I think if you're going to take one thing away from this, is that Josh Hader has a bad barrel rate and Brandon Workman has a good one. And so, you know, if you isolate the stat alone, you're not doing yourself any favors. And so finding correlation with some other numbers is a better way to go about it, to figure out if you need to regress it back toward the mean. Some pitchers have higher BABIPs, for example, or lower BABIPs career than the average. And so definitely something to dig a little bit deeper into our barrel rates as we go through the season. And we have, you know, some statistics, some actual games. Hopefully we get some actual games. I know that that's the topic of the day, is that the Cactus League, which isn't even a thing, but the Arizona spring training facilities are petitioning to delay. So We will see. But one thing that you should not delay in doing is going to Amazon.com and buying the 2021 Fantasy Baseball Black Book with some of the best authors and some of the best minds in fantasy baseball, including our guest, Joe Pisapia. Joe, you get another 2 minutes to plug your book.
Well, first of all, let me say thank you to having me on. I appreciate it, and I appreciate all your support before I got to do a show with you, get to know you, and I was very happy to have you come on board this year. And Todd, that's some fascinating stats. I love all that. That's going to be really interesting to see how that correlates with pitcher's velocity going up and down too. Guys who lose velocity, does barrel rate increase and things like that. There's lots of interesting things there to pick apart. But yeah, Fantasy Black Book is out there right now on Amazon. You can get it on the paperback. You can get it for Kindle. It'll be on iTunes probably by the end of the week, if not by next week too. And again, it's a great team. You got Eric Cross doing 100 prospects, right, for Dynasty. Not 100 prospects like Baseball America, like for actual fantasy purposes that matter for fantasy, not for reality. You got Aaron's work in there. You got Casey Bubba. You got Chris Meany. You got Michael Simeone. You got Paul Sporer. You've got Ariel Cohen. You've got just this list of incredible people that I'm just so pleased that I have the ability to work with all of them, and they all do such great work. The Welsh, my podcast partner, obviously, we do all the draft strategy chapters together. So it's a great companion for the whole season. I don't look at it as a draft guide. I look at it as like, this is your guide for the season. Let's take you through, and great shows like this will be able to, you know, keep you updated. But you know, it's a way to evaluate trades. It's a way to draft. It's a way to look at your dynasty leagues. It's a way to do everything, because I think that's what's missing in the marketplace, right? There's so much great content, but how do I use it? How do I take all the stats? How do I take all the knowledge? How do I take all this stuff and actually turn it into strategy? And that's what we try to do with the Black Book. So I appreciate you guys letting me come on and plug it and also hang out and talk a little baseball. It's refreshing. It's been a great football season, so it's nice to kind of be getting back into the baseball chatter these last few weeks.
13 consecutive hours of talking, Joe. Now you can just shut up.
That's right. I'm going to go shut up for a little while. Good luck with that. This Italian can talk all day, luckily, and all night. But yeah, I'm done for the day. I'll go watch a little wrestling. That's what I'm going to do. My boys are on Impact tonight. My co-host, Eric Young and Matt Stryker from the Sunday Morning Show, a host on Sports Grid TV. I got to go support my boys. So I'll probably go check them out tonight.
Plug into the very end, Joe. Thanks.
Plug into the very end, baby.
thanks for listening, everybody, and stay tuned for Bob with the postgame show.
Postgame show is brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.